This is Playing with Fire.
He's at the 20, the 10, the 5. Touchdown!
3 seconds remaining. 2-1. Shots up. It's good!
Here's the pitch, the swing. It's a long fly ball. It's going, going, it's gone! Revealing the secrets of the elite athlete. But be careful. You're playing with fire.
This week, an interview with the director of Catholic Athletes for Christ, Ray McKenna. Music from Cat Yonke, soul food, and much more.
Freestyle. Welcome, everybody. This is Dr. Bill. I think we have another great show lined up for you today. I guess maybe if there's a theme for today's show, it's something about, you know, being, you know, tough-minded, you know, having good judgment, you know, how to deal with, you know, maybe competing, if you have an energy, you know, anger or a chip on your shoulder, whatever it might be, you know, what is the right way to compete, and what does it mean to really have a tough mind? Those are some of the people that we're going to talk to today and some of the segments we'll be covering, and so I'm looking forward to a great show. Let's get going. Listen up.
Well, my guest today is someone who I've just gotten to know in recent years. I guess time flies by, so I guess it's been now a couple of years. But his name is Ray McKenna, and Ray is an attorney down in Washington, D.C. He is president of Catholic Athletes for Christ, and the way that Ray and I came to know each other is that we were invited by Father Lixey over to the Vatican, and I mentioned that on one of my earlier podcasts, to a new department that was created in the Vatican called Church and Sport. And we kind of hit it off, and, you know, Ray has a great insight into athletics and sports and has a lot of people that he knows, especially in the baseball world. So, Ray, thank you so much for being with us today.
It's my pleasure, Bill, and I'm really excited about your efforts at Belmont Abbey and in sport and reclaiming the game. It warms my heart when I think about it.
Now, let me ask you, what's been your experience so far with sport, both on the, you know, kind of the, you know, seeing the value of sport as a means for developing virtue? What have you observed?
All the athletes who work with us, and most athletes in general, I think, are, you know, very much committed to not only developing their physical attributes, but also working on their spiritual life, because it's, you know, there are those, you know, sadly, and they get all the publicity and all the coverage, but, you know, there are those who are oblivious to the fact that they've been given a great gift. But most athletes realize that the Lord has blessed them, and they feel consequently a concomitant obligation to give back. And
Right. Also
to integrate the Lord into their life, most importantly, you know, for them, into their athletic life, because that's their vocation. That's how they, if you will, worship the Lord.
You and I are saying we see so many good men, and there's certainly good women out there in you know, LPGA and other women's, you know, sports. You know, what I notice happening is that, again, because it strikes me that those in other Christian denominations, because they're more forthcoming, and maybe it's because they're more community oriented, meaning there's more of a social component to it, whereas I think the Catholic perspective sometimes maybe lacks that, and so often, you know, they're not supported. A Catholic athlete's not necessarily supported in his faith, you know, and you know, maybe attends a Bible study, which is fantastic, but it doesn't do much to further, you know, develop his formation as a Catholic and support him as a Catholic. And so very often, you know, their faith either, you know, wavers or diminishes, or they just, you know, aren't very fervent in their practice.
I think that's true, and sadly, there's a larger phenomenon of Catholics in America, which is that there's a general reticence, I think, to speak out or, you know, evangelize, being maybe the term that the Pope would use, to share your faith. There's more of a reticence and what I believe is a terrible misconception that faith is a purely private matter. that it's something you do with God, and it's not an appropriate topic to share with people. In fact, even if you share your faith, you know, you run the risk of offending somebody, which I guess you do, but if you share your faith appropriately, you run the quote-unquote risk of actually benefiting somebody else.
I think it's 1 Peter 3:15, you know, mm-hmm. which is be ready to give reason,
to give reason.
Hope with respect and kindness, gentleness, you know. But that's, you know, it's just interesting. Now, you bring up something else, which is the broader maybe worldview. And, you know, here we had gone to that, you know, church and sport. And, you know, what were your thoughts just about that whole trip? And what do you see coming from the Vatican's Department of Church and Sport?
Well, I was very encouraged that the Vatican, you know, under the leadership of the late, great John Paul, taken the time and effort to open a section in the Council, Pontifical Council for the Laity, on this topic. And I think it's a realization, and like all aspects of his papacy, of John Paul's papacy, a realization that sport is such a significant, important aspect of the culture of evangelization that it can't be ignored. I mean, there are a lot of people, sadly, a lot of well-intentioned, wonderful Christian folks whose response to the problems we were discussing at the outset would say, well, let's just shun sports, let's avoid it entirely. And I don't think that's the appropriate response. I don't think that's a feasible response even. It's just ceding a huge portion of culture to the evil one by doing
it. Right. Well, and like we've talked about before, I mean, sport affects the entire world. I mean, you know, even if you don't participate in sport, you're going to sit in traffic, you know, for the Super Bowl. I mean, indirectly or directly, you're going to be affected by sport in some way in the society, and it just seems kind of a poor idea to not participate and be part of that and to influence it, hopefully, in a very positive way. And so, you know, I think you're doing a great job, and anybody that's interested, I know on our website, reclaimthegame.com, we have a link to Catholic Athletes for Christ. But is your website catholicathletesforchrist.com?
Yes, it is, or .org,
okay.
Either one.
.org, okay.
.org.
Good, okay. So I know if they go there, you have lots of information about the things that you're doing specifically with Catholic athletes, and you have a list of, I know some impressive number of players and so forth are part of that and have spoken out and, you know, given kind of their witness, their belief in Jesus Christ being the center of their lives and what they're doing and what helps motivate them to perform as world-class athletes.
What's hot? You know, I got to see a movie the other night. Many of you may have seen it before. It's called Iron Will. I had seen it a couple times before. It's one of those kind of nice movies. You know, I have a lot of children, so we sit down and we watch some of these things together. And Iron Will is a story about a young man who loses his father, and he's up in the wilds of the Yukon and so forth, and he's going to be in this, you know, race, this great dog sled race, and it's a way of, you know, financially helping himself and his family. What made me, you know, relate to it in some way is that when I was in high school, I ran cross country, and you know, all I can think about is cross country is towards the end of the race, you know, you're running down that long, long finish line. You know, these are long races, you know, 2.5 to 5 miles, depending on, you know, what race. And, you know, I remember my eyes being kind of half closed and literally you're drooling, you know, and you just don't think the finish line's ever going to come. And this movie just reminds me so much of that. And it's a great story. It's about really almost the difference of, you know, playing as a neighborhood kid, you know, playing a sport and or playing at the pros. And it's really a story of someone going from boyhood to manhood. And he learns to really go beyond what he or anybody else, for that matter, thought possible for himself. And I think it's a great challenge for us in life to try to do the same. So if you have the opportunity, I recommend Iron Will. Praying Twice. This is None of Those Things by Kat Janke. So
you can cry about losing your love, and you can cry about losing your pet, that's okay, and you can cry about losing a friend to the errors of yesterday. Cause none of those things quite existed anyway.
That was Kat Janke with None of Those Things. You can find her song on GarageBand or just check out our show notes at reclaimthegame.com. It's your call. One of the questions I recently received was, how do you get a scholarship to college? Now, I'm not sure if they mean any kind of scholarship or an athletic scholarship. Generally, you know, most colleges, I know Belmont Abbey College, obviously I'm president there, we have a very generous financial aid packaging. And so there's a lot of opportunities for various types of scholarships, whether they be, you know, purely academic or some related to athletics or some related to other activities like, you know, theater scholarships and so forth. Basically, you need to go and, you know, go to the financial aid office of the college that you're interested in, and usually they can give you some guideline for where you might fall, what kind of scholarships, given maybe your grades and your interests and so forth, what you might be qualified to receive. If we're talking about athletic scholarships, obviously that's a little bit different. You know, it's going to be based on your performance. It's going to be based on your academics. It's going to be based on, you know, where you want to go to school. You know, do you want to go to Division I, Division II, Division III, NAIA, or whatever, you know, wherever else you might be going. So that will have some bearing on whether you get a scholarship or not. I'd recommend that, you know, if you're interested in athletic scholarship that and you don't have a lot of people, you know, maybe calling you or looking at you, it's always good to make a, you know, a small, short, I emphasize short, highlight film of yourself that also includes maybe at the end of it some actual game, you know, footage where somebody can see in real action, not just, quote, the highlights. And you send that with a nice note to a coach. Just say, I'm really interested in your school, and I'm, you know, I really would like to attend. I'm interested in performing, you know, being on your team. And you'd be surprised. Most coaches will write back to you and take a look at it, and it may lead to something good for yourselves. So try that out and see what happens. And remember, you can reach us on our comment listener line, 206-203-1301. Again, I'll give it to you, 206-203-1301. Or please write to me at feedback@reclaimthegame.com and let me know what you're thinking. Skills and drills. Just like with speed, most people want to know how to jump higher. Everybody would like to jump higher. You know, I don't know. I haven't seen anybody ever go to a basketball court where they were not trying to touch the net or the rim or actually dunk a basketball. It's something that, you know, we're all sort of inspired to do. And, you know, just this sensation of leaving the ground is something that I think appeals to all of us. My background as a high jumper, I learned to leave the ground by a little bit. My best jump at the University of Maryland when I was there, it was 7'4¼", 7'4". And, you know, that was pretty good for its time. I think I might actually still have the school record there. But I thought I'd just share with you a couple of insights about how do you jump higher, because it's a real skill. Not only do you need to be strong enough and do all the training and so forth, but there's real technique to how you jump higher. So I thought I'd just share a couple of those things with you. And for those that are either, you know, close to touching the rim and just want to touch the rim, or those that are touching the rim but would love to be able to dunk a basketball, some of the things I'm going to tell you might actually help you with that little bit of a difference. First thing is, in terms of actually running up off the ground, now listen to how I just phrased that. You want to run up off the ground. Very often what's happened is when people want to try to jump up in the air, they run very fast towards whatever they're trying to jump up at, and then they try to take off. What ends up happening is it becomes more like the long jump as opposed to the high jump. One of the skills a high jumper has, or somebody that can jump high has, is that they're really good at converting their horizontal speed, that means their running speed, into upward, vertical height. And the way that they do it is that when they're running, if I took like the last three steps of somebody, you know, right prior to a jump, what they actually do is on the second to last step, they actually drop their center of gravity, meaning they take a little bit of a longer step on the second to last step. Okay, and then what they do is, because they've already dropped their center of gravity, they take a little bit shorter step, their very last step, as they're planting their foot to take off. That little bit of a shorter step allows you to begin your center of gravity actually moving upward before you've even left the ground. So that kind of sensation of running up off the ground. So almost think of a roller coaster, you know, that you're kind of running, you know, kind of down and sort of like this, take this little dip and then boom, you know, up and over. That's the sensation that gets you up off the ground, as opposed to like moving along the ground or long jumping. The other thing that's critical to jumping high is your arm punch. Most people don't recognize how much your arms influence the amount of what I'll call punch, you know, how much you get off the ground. And what you want to be able to do with your arms is that as you kind of circle your arms to drive them upwards, you want to have your elbows actually then come in tight to your body. So picture your arms kind of circling out around you like you're about to drive them up. Your elbow, as your arms are driving up, should be right below your shoulders. And what actually ends up happening is that the force or the momentum of your arms being brought around and up is actually translated through your elbow, which goes right through your shoulder. And so what ends up happening is your shoulders end up somewhere around your ears. And you're not doing that because you're manually trying to lift up your shoulders. You're doing it because the speed with which your arms came around actually fired your shoulders up there. Your traps really take over when you try to freeze it. And that's a key thing to getting rise or hang time when you're jumping. And that is, your arms come around, they punch and then hold. And so when you drive up your knee and you drive up your arms and your shoulders the way I'm describing, when they both get to the top, and they should do that at the same time, so timing's very, you know, key to this jumping ability, you want your lead knee and your arms to kind of hit the top part of their movement at the same exact moment and then freeze them, hold them there. And that's what gives you the sensation of rise and hanging in the air. And I think if you give that a shot, you may find that you can jump just a few inches higher. Iron will. You know, one of the most difficult things for anybody is change. For all of us, it's a hard thing to do, and it's somewhat sometimes it's a scary thing to do. And, you know, the way I describe, you know, how we get through it, because most times we want to avoid it, but if you have to go through some change, whatever it might be in your life, mentally, how can I describe it to you in a way that maybe you'll understand what I'm trying to get at? Well, I'm going to give you this analogy. Most people have jumped off a diving board before. Imagine you're at a pool someplace, and you've never gone off the diving board before. And you're watching all these people jump off or dive off, whatever they're doing, and everybody seems to be having a good time. And so you finally bring yourself to say, I'm going to go do that. And so you walk over to the diving board, you climb up the ladder, you start to walk out on the board, and as you walk out on the board, suddenly you start to slow down. And you come to the end of the diving board, and usually you stop, and you look out, and there's two things happening right now. Everything in you is saying, stop, go back, this is a bad idea. You're going to sink like a rock, you're going to drown, something bad's going to happen, go back down the ladder. Another part of your brain's saying, no, I've seen people go off, this is fun, people are splashing, they're laughing, they're having fun with this, I want to do this. And there's this battle going on. So here you are at the pool, on the diving board, everybody else is sitting around the lounge chairs, splashing around the water and so forth. Nobody knows that right now there's this battle going on in your head. Well, for most of us, we find the way of going off. Now, some people just scream and finally, like, jump off the end. Other people, you know, try to keep one foot on the board and slowly lower their body so their foot's trying to touch the water at the same time to minimize the height they're going to drop. But eventually, we all seem to find the way into the water. And what happens? We go in, we, thank God, come back up, and then we swim or crawl over to the ladder, and we come back up, and we come around, and here we are going up for the second time. Now, as we go up the second time, the same feeling wants to come back over you, which is, this is a bad thing, don't do it. But this time, you don't pause, or you don't slow down as much because you just saw that it's okay. In other words, your brain was telling you somehow this is a bad thing, something's going to happen, but you just went off and it was actually okay. So this time you don't hesitate as much and you go off. And you know, after about the 13th or 14th time around, the lifeguard is yelling at you to stop running, and you're not just going off the board anymore. Now you are doing cannonballs, and you're doing splits in the air, and you're jumping for height, and you're jumping for distance, and you can't even remember the first time that you went off. And so basically what's happened is that first time, you know, what we were struggling with is this emotion, this false belief that something bad was going to happen to us. And that often is the reason that change doesn't happen, that we resist it, because it feels like something bad's going to happen. But this is where you have to use your will. This is where you have to use your reason that God gave you, is to look at a situation and say, you know, this is reasonable. It's, you know, in this case, it's very safe. There's no reason for me not to do this, and I really want to do it. And so you bring yourself to do it. And what starts to happen, as I said, by the time you get the 13th, 14th, you can't even remember that first time anymore. And that's really a way that we can change. And so give it some thought as whatever you may be faced with in your life presents some challenge and some change to you. Again, think about it and maybe take the leap.
Soul food.
You know, very often we are confronted with decisions. You know, as athletes, there's many decisions for us to make. And the question is, how do we make them? You know, how do we make a good choice, a good decision? Well, today I want to talk a little bit about the virtue of prudence. You know, again, it's a word that we don't tend to use. We should, but we tend not to use it too much. You know, prudential, prudent, you know, these are where this word comes from. But what does prudence mean? Well, it really means, how do we make a good decision? You know, the right conduct. St. Thomas actually defined it as the method of right conduct. You know, let me give you an example. Training. You know, most people I've worked with, most athletes I've worked with over the years, if anything, the ones I've worked with at least, tend towards overtraining. They do too much. So for example, if I, you know, recommended that, you know, Friday really needs to be a light day, meaning in terms of your workload, whatever it might be, some athletes have a really hard time doing a light day. They feel somehow bad. They feel like they're not doing enough. They feel like they're falling behind in some way. And so this kind of irrational, fear or emotion is the thing that, moves you sometimes to make a poor decision. You end up, really saying, well, I can't bring myself to do that little. I'm going to do a little bit more than maybe I should, but it's probably going to be good for me. Well, now that's how you overtrain. That's how you get overuse injuries and so forth. Preparing for a competition, in terms of, do you get enough sleep? Do you eat? Do you do all those kinds of things? Are we balanced in our life? So this idea of prudence, I thought I'd just maybe share a little thing with you here. I have a little tiny book. I always like these little books because they're easy to kind of carry around with you and reflect on, and they don't take too much to sit down and read them. But Virtue and Vice is the book, and it's basically the writings of C.S. Lewis, a very famous writer. It was edited by Patricia Klein, and it was put out by Harper San Francisco, and basically it's kind of the dictionary of the good life. And I'm just going to read you like a little section here to understand what he defines as prudence or describes as being prudent. He tries to do it in a practical way for everyday life. But he says, prudent means practical common sense, taking the trouble to think out what you are doing and what is likely to come of it. That's a good thing to think about that. Sometimes we make decisions without thinking. Nowadays, most people hardly think of prudence as one of the virtues. In fact, because Christ said we could only get into his world by being like children, many Christians have the idea that provided you are good, it does not matter being a fool. Well, of course, that's not what he's, really talking about. And he goes on to say, but this is a misunderstanding. In the first place, most children show plenty of prudence about doing things they are really interested in, and they think of them, in a quite sensible way. In the second place, St. Paul points out, Christ never meant that we were to remain children in intelligence. On the contrary, he told us not only to be as harmless as doves, but also as wise as serpents. If we want to be a child's heart, but a grown-up's head, then we need to consider how prudence may be working in our life. He wants us to be simple, not single-minded, affectionate, teachable, as good children are. But he also wants us a bit, to increase in every bit of intelligence and to be alerted, on our job and to be first class, fighting trim, as they say. The fact that you are giving money to a charity does not mean that you need not try to find out whether that charity is a fraud or not. The fact that what you are thinking about is God himself. For example, when you're praying, this does not mean that he cannot be content with the same babyish ideas which you had when you were 5 years old. It is, of course, quite true that God will not love you any less or have less use for you if you happen to have been born with a very second-rate brain. He has room for people with very little sense, but he wants every one of us to use what sense they have. And so basically all he's saying is that prudence is really a way for us to make good decisions and to really try to maximize and to double those talents that God has blessed us with. And so that's just something to reflect on, prudence in your life, how to make good decisions, and so continue to work on perfecting those virtues, specifically prudence in your daily life. Thanks for being part of the show. I'm hoping that I'll continue to hear from you. You can call our listener comment line at 206-203-1301. Or write me at feedback@reclaimthegame.com. And I'll ask you to please spread the word about the website, reclaimthegame.com, and to also talk about this podcast specifically, Playing with Fire. And, continue to give me your feedback. I want to make it what you want it to be, and I want to improve it, and I want to double my talent. So I'll look forward to your help in making that a reality. So spread the word, and I'll look forward to talking to you again soon. Take care and God bless.